So, good morning. I'm Matt. I don't think I mentioned that at the start. I'm the curate, so I've been here 6 weeks. And I want to start you off with a question. How brave are you? So how brave do you think you are? When I read this story, it got me wondering about Elijah. And I thought, well, if we had raised a widow's son from death like he did, if we had seen God supply food that never ended, if we could stop and start the rain at a word, if we'd been involved in a match against Baal, which everyone had watched, and we'd won, and we'd seen, or God had won, and we'd seen lightning come down, if we'd seen fire rain from heaven, if we had had the strength given to us to run faster than a horse, than the king's horse, and we'd got to the palace, then maybe we wouldn't have been afraid of the death threats of Jezebel. Perhaps. Or perhaps we would have done. I wonder why Elijah turns quite as fast as he does. He runs faster than a horse, faster than the king to get to the palace, to say, God's won, this is the true God. The king seems like he buys it, and yet he gets to the palace, he hears Jezebel say, well, I'm going to kill him, and he turns around and runs away. And yet, he's faced hundreds of people in the last few days and seen God do some amazing things. I wonder what happened to him. I wonder how he lost focus. Perhaps he lost track of who God was. One of the things that's helped me to think about focus has been learning to ride a motorbike. I did it about 6 years ago. I don't know if we could have a quick show of hands. Anyone else who rides in here? Have we got any other? Oh, we've got a few. Okay. And perhaps you can agree with what I'm going to share, which is to say that on a motorbike, it's not the gears which is the hardest thing. It's not the brakes. It's not the fact you're traveling on tiny bits of rubber that makes the difference. The biggest thing I found hard was cornering. See, when you go around a corner on a motorbike, I was constantly thinking, that hedge is where I don't want to be. I'm not going to run into that hedge. I'm not going to hit the pavement. And the more I did it, the more I spent all my time looking at the hedge and steered towards it. And it was some time before the instructor said, wherever you are looking, that is where you will head. If you look at the hedge, you will end up in it. So look where you're going, and then you'll end up where you want to be. And so for us too, our question is, what are our eyes on? When we're in the middle of whatever God has called us to, wherever we are, what are our eyes fixed upon? Elijah seems to have lost track of that. And so he goes out and he finds a bush and he says, God, please kill me. And I think it's fascinating that God starts very, very practically. Anyone in my house would tell you, if I'm grumpy or tired or fed up, you do two things. Feed me and leave me to sleep. And I think it's just wonderful that God starts so practically with Elijah. He starts out sending some angels, feed him up, let him sleep, feed him up, let him sleep some more. I wonder what will happen. Perhaps God hoped that that would restore him, would get him back on track. I've sat in hundreds and hundreds of sermons in church, and quite a few you could boil down to do more and do better. And so for some of you, I want to say this morning, God would say to you, have a rest, have some food, and then he'll re-envision you and equip you to do the things he's called us to. He calls us to rest, to look after ourselves. But for Elijah, that isn't enough. He's still fed up. It's interesting, the angel says to him, you haven't got the strength for the journey ahead of you. I wonder what journey that was. Did the angel mean to go back and finish the job? Because after all, the people have just recommitted themselves to God. The king seems pretty convinced. They've seen God do lots. The people of Israel are in a good place. Go back and finish the job. But that isn't what Elijah does. He goes back to the place where he met God before. For some of us this morning, perhaps that's relevant to us. We've lost a little bit of sight of God. And so we might need to think, well, where did I last meet God? How did I last encounter him? Can I go back to some of those places that might help me? So Elijah goes, and he goes off to Mount Sinai or Horeb. It's the same place. He goes back to the place where the Israelites have always met God, where Moses gave them the Ten Commandments. He goes back to the place of the burning bush. Surely there he can meet with God. Surely there he'll be able to find focus again. And so he gets to the mountain and he finds a cave and he puts himself up in the cave. And then God comes to him and says, "What do you want? What are you doing here?" And I don't know, as you read it, how you hear God's words. Is it, "What are you doing here? You're meant to be back there. You're meant to be in Israel where I've called you." Or maybe it's, "What are you doing here? What is it that I can do that will help you?" Jesus said to the blind man, obviously far later in the Bible, "What can I do? What do you want me to do for you?" And perhaps that's what God is saying to him. How can I restore you? What is it that you need? So God invites him to see him. He tells him to come out and stand on the mountain. I wonder if you've picked up that Elijah doesn't do that. He stays in the cave. He's a bit worried. He goes to the mouth of the cave, but he won't go out on the hill. I wonder why he won't. When you read it, perhaps it's the rocks being split in two. Perhaps it's the lightning. I know I would have been a bit intimidated. But it's interesting that it's not in those things that God comes. In the previous chapter, God does come in lightning. But in this chapter, he comes in the silence, in the whisper. The word literally says, "in a thin silence." I was talking to one of our children a few days ago who was saying, "Every time that you come in to put me to bed, sometimes I'm not asleep, but I pretend and I can sense you in the room." And she said, "Tonight is the first time that I've sensed God in the room, but I couldn't see him." And I wonder if that's something of this thin silence that Elijah experiences. So will this encounter, will it fix Elijah's eyes back on God again? Will he get his focus back? I'm not sure he does, because as it says in the text, God then asks him again, "What are you doing here?" And the same answer, exactly the same answer as before he's experienced the God of the universe. He says exactly the same thing again. "All the people have betrayed you. It's only me who's faithful. I'm afraid." It's interesting that's not true. God didn't, before the experience, correct him and say, "Well, hang about, how about the people of Israel that have just come back to me? How about these other prophets that I've got hidden, the 7,000 we find out about at the end?" And yet at this stage, God does seem to do a little bit more corrective. Actually, here's what the truth is. I think God is very kind in this. He allows Elijah to experience him. But later he's kind of nudging him. Is this really the truth? What is actually the reality here? And perhaps God does the same for us, that he allows us to experience him, to come close to him, and then he nudges us. This is what it really looks like, this role that I've given you in the workplace, in the home. This is what I really want to do with you. But Elijah is at the end, it seems, burnt out. He's had enough. His perspective cannot be lifted. And he doesn't return in glory to finish off the job. Sometimes it seems that God can build us up and set us off on the same thing again. But in this case, almost in kindness, he says to Elijah, "No, you can appoint somebody else, Elisha, who will finish this job for you." It's interesting that when you read the Bible, Elijah doesn't then hang up his spurs, so to speak, and go off for his retirement. He continues for a good few chapters doing things for God. And for some of us, perhaps that's the stage that we're thinking. We're thinking, "Well, God has got me to do these things so far. This is what he's given me to do thus far. But I'm at a new stage. I need to think, what is God calling me to next?" Because God doesn't seem to do retirement for us. So a few ways that we might want to respond this morning. It may be that you know exactly what God has called you to, and that you just would like someone to pray with you and say, well, pray more into this thing that God has called me to. It may be that you need food and a rest, in which case it's quite obvious how to respond to that. It may be that you need another encounter with him, in which case we'd be happy to pray for you as well. So as Dave and the band come back up, perhaps we could stand and I'll pray. Because it's the summer, we don't really have a prayer ministry team as far as I'm aware. So would you mind giving me a wave if you wouldn't mind praying for somebody else if they said, can I have some prayer? We've got anyone who wouldn't mind praying for anybody else? Okay, so we've got quite a few. So if you're someone who thinks this morning, actually, I'd like some prayer. These are some people you might, sorry, can we have another wave from the people? These are some people who wouldn't mind praying for you. I wouldn't mind as well. So as we pray, if you want to find one of those or want to find one at the end, you are very welcome.